As we got put out of my first high school for beating somebody with a chair, we would go to school in ninth grade with book bags full of weed. They had an argument, I beat them with a bat because I was becoming this dude. I started getting a little buzz in my city. And next thing you know, I started getting around different celebrities. You know, you got a whole bunch of killers in one room making music now. I jump in the car, boom, drive down the street real quick. As soon as I stopped in front of his house, 10 shots just rang, pop, 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 pop. When the shots went off in the car, I said, God, don't let me die like this, though.
Hello and welcome back to the Almost False podcast, where I interview regular people with incredible stories. Today's guest had the most radical transformation I've ever heard of. He used to be a big-time drug dealer and rapper in the city of Baltimore until he had a radical encounter with the Holy Spirit, which flipped his life upside down. His name is Aaron Livers, otherwise known as Live SB, and this is the story of his life.
When I first started high school, I was still living in the projects. And then our neighborhoods got the beef, and I actually got put out of my first high school for beating somebody with a chair. I had to get put out of school. We moved from the projects to a neighborhood in South Baltimore. I started hooking school all the time. My mother was like, you know what? I'm not buying you no more clothes. I'm not looking out for you no more. I'm not doing nothing for you. Because before even high school, I was already selling drugs. I didn't tell this part of my testimony before, but I was already catching the bus to a different part of Baltimore with my cousins selling drugs. So I was already, you know, getting my hands involved in them things already. So when we moved to the different part of Baltimore, South Baltimore, and I stopped going to school because I was, you know, getting money different kind of ways. My mother wasn't doing nothing for me at that time because she didn't see nothing productive for me for us academics. And I was just like, you know what, I'm going to have to figure something out. So I ran into this dude who was, you know, in that neighborhood. He was moving with power and authority and muscle. And I was familiar with people moving like that because I'm from the projects. And I recognized, like, man, like, I wasn't afraid to die. I wasn't afraid to, you know, to do what he was already doing. I was like, I can do that. Like, you know, man, I grew up like this. I'm conditioned and I know that if I apply pressure, people won't take it where I would take it at. So when I was seeing him do it, I was still watching him do it. I was still getting into certain things, you know, being a kind of like a bully, intimidated guy in the neighborhood a little, to a certain extent. Not too bad, but to a certain extent. Then he started giving me and my homie pounds of weed. We would go to school in ninth grade with book bags full of weed. And I started making my money and stuff like that. And next thing you know, he get locked up and go to jail for attempt murder. And next thing you know, I became this dude that I never thought I would be. And if anybody was to deal with my mother, like, they knew, like you had to deal with this young dude. You know what I'm saying? So then I became a problem in my neighborhood, like a problem towards everything around me. So to the point where, though, one time my mother was even talking to her boyfriend in the car. They had an argument. I beat him with a bat because I was becoming this dude and, like, don't play with me type of dude, because I watched my mother at a young age fight her boyfriends and I was too small to defend her. And I mean, now I'm older, muscle warming, you know, and I can defend her, whether it was with a gun or whether it was with a bat or whether it was with my hands. You know what I mean? I can defend her. So I became something that I just never thought I would become, man.
Right. Would you say that that was the reason why you became the person you were, seeing your mom struggle, seeing your mom in these relationships and having, you know, abuse in the home? Would you say that was the main driver, or was it something else? What were your aspirations growing up? Did you have a dream of becoming a drug dealer, or was it more survival?
Nah, I don't think nobody dreamed to be a drug dealer. Like, I mean, some people might do, but well, it definitely wasn't. I used to play basketball. I used to hoop, and I used to be really good at it. And I think I didn't have that support the way I needed it. Then, like, it was hard for my mother to go to work every day and do all these things and still support two children and be able to focus on their dreams and stuff like that. So I didn't have that. I was always really good at playing ball, but it just wasn't paying no bills. It wasn't, you know, getting me, you know, nowhere as far as finances or nothing like that. And I didn't have that motivation behind me to push me to do it. So I never would have thought, like, nobody could ever told me that I was going to become a drug dealer. But I would listen to drug dealer type of music. Like, you know what I mean? That music started meditating in my heart even more. Like, And the more the music started getting in my heart, it started actually raising me. So, hip hop music and gangster music actually was like raising me because my dad wasn't around. So whatever that was going in my head. So it was just more so making me more into an animal. So, it wasn't more. So I had dreams. It was just like them dreams didn't seem like it was going to be a reality for me at all. And right then, they had drug dealing. And stuff like that. That stuff was like right there, and I understood it, and I seen that I could still be some type of superstar that way.
Right, but there was a part of it to you that was appealing. Maybe it was the money side of it, that or the prestige, the honor, and that was appealing to you. I think that's why you started looking up to this man that you mentioned earlier that got locked up, and then you took his place in the neighborhood and started becoming that guy. Did it fulfill you as much as you thought it would, having all the money? Because you had all these things. You had all the girls, all the money. You were the man in the area. Did it feel as good as what you had envisioned?
Some days it felt good. Some days I would say it really felt good, like everything that I would imagine. You never being fulfilled. But when you're in the neighborhood and you're young and you got the cars, you got the clothes, you got the money, we got all these cars lined up outside and girls coming through there, just driving through just to see if we outside and stuff like that. Money spent, we able to go to the sections of clubs and have all these different things and people being able to look like, yo, that's bro right there. Or you in a neighborhood and people got to talk to you before they do certain things. Or they can't sell drugs right here because this is where y'all at and they know things could happen to them and stuff like that. And you finally somebody who actually really matter. You know what I'm saying? So in a demonic way, it was so, my mind was so clouded, but it felt good for the moment. And then, you still had to go deal with the repercussions of it. Like, going to jail, getting locked up, beefing, shooting, and, consistently just trying to hold down your territory. You in situations where you can't really show face around a certain time because it's just too hot. Your homeboy's losing their life. You just leave somebody, they get shot with a shotgun and die. You just left them 5 minutes ago and they do get killed. You start seeing your friends get shot all around you. Things is happening, people losing their life, mothers crying, like looking at you like, what happened to my baby and stuff like that. And you like, man, I'm like, dang, I kind of probably had something to do with that in some type of way. You know what I'm saying? Like, so, and then you realizing that it's not what you thought it would be. But you'll have the moments because people will puff you up because you need an affirmation and you'll start feeling like you're this person. But then deep down inside, you got a lot of skeletons in your closet, I would say. Like,
right. That's the part that people don't usually talk about. It's the non-glamorized part. That you had some young people that were working for you and some of them, died because of you. And that was the guilt that you have to work with as you grow and as you continue in that life. You get more and more guilt. And that led you to somewhere where you kind of needed to express some of it. And you got into music through a friend that really wanted you to become a rapper. You didn't seem too interested, but eventually you did, and you started expressing the way that you lived through music. Did music help you, and how did that impact you in your journey?
The music part, it gave me an outlet to express, the lifestyle I was living. And I felt like, I was living the life that people was lying and saying that they was living. So it was at this particular time in Baltimore, it was a whole bunch of people who was talking about they was driving the cars that we was driving, and they had the money that we was having, the jewelry, and then they was doing what we was doing. And I was like, bro, don't nobody know you. So I was like, and then that's how the streets was talking. Like, no, I don't know them. So me and my homeboy, we went to the studio. They was rapping. I did a couple hooks just playing around. Never been in the studio. And then my homeboy was like, man, like you can do this, bro, if you wanted to. And I'm like, man, I ain't no rapper, bro. I'm a trapper. I'm a hustler. I'm like, I don't know, rap, bro. Like, he was like, bro, you can really do this for real. I was like, I play around with it for a while. And then once I started making music and I started seeing the reactions around me, and I was like, oh, I can probably do something with this right here for real. And then I started taking it really more serious. And I think, you know, I started becoming, getting a little buzz in my city, in my neighborhood. And I think, you know, I started getting around different celebrities, being around a lot of local superstars in my city who was already popping. We doing a lot of music collaborations. All the drug dealers is really rappers now. So now, you know, you got a whole bunch of killers and like drug dealers and, you know, like in one room making music now, like everybody from different parts of Baltimore in one studio now. And I became this rapper. Now I'm about to drop this project called Neighborhood Superstar, because that's who I am. I'm my neighborhood superstar. I'm that guy and where I'm at. And everybody waiting. Like, it was crazy. It was crazy because I became not wanting to do it. Then I started doing it. Then I became good at it. Then it became like, man, I'm ready to get out the, you know, the streets with this.
And it gave you an outlet to talk about the things you were doing and the things that you rapped about, like you said, were actually things that you had lived or you were currently living. And one of the things that you experienced, which I think is a part that changed your life, is there was one night where you almost died. And I want you to tell that story because it has a really significant impact on the rest of your journey.
When I was making Neighborhood Superstar, and we about to drop Neighborhood Superstar, and I'm in the studio with all these dudes, everybody excited. We're getting the last final mix down to the project. And I'm like, all right, bet. So I'm like, man, I ain't no social media dude, nothing like that. So I end up going live on social media for the first time. I never did it before. So, you know, man, I done did stuff to people in the streets and stuff like that. So I'm like live on social media in the studio. So we get Neighborhood Superstar. I'm listening to guy, everybody listening to it. We high, we drunk, we gone, we cry off pills, everything. We just in there, just gone. And I'm like, bro, this joint about to be crazy. And so my producer who was playing the beats for me, he's like, all right, live, I need somebody to drop me off home. I'm like, bro, you know, you show love, you came here, I'll take you home real quick. Leave the studio. I had a convertible Lexus drop top. And I put the hard top up and I just, you know, ran out the studio real quick. This is drop my album, come right back. So I wasn't even thinking about having no gun on me, wasn't thinking about nothing. I was just like, let me just hurry up and just drop them off and come right back. I jump in the car, boom, drive him down the street real quick. And as soon as I stopped in front of his house, 10 shots just rang out, pop, 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 close range on the car. I threw his head down. I'm like, yo, oh my goodness. And I threw his head and I laid on top of him because I couldn't let him die like that because he ain't never do nothing. And I think I just, you know, I woke up in the hospital with handcuffs because I had warrants for my arrest for some other stuff that was going on. And I was just like, yo. And there was a police officer right there. And I was like, man, what is he here doing? He was like, man, I just felt like I needed to be there for you. I'm like, all right, whatever. He's just trying to get some information out of me. trying to see what's, you know. Trying, you know what I mean, whatever. But he was like, nah, man, I took a liking to you. I'm like, bro, I was gone. How you getting a liking to me? I'm however, whatever drugs they put at me. So I woke up, I had staples all the way up my stomach. And because they had to cut me open to get the bullets out. And I got hit in my back. And when I woke up in the hospital, I'm like, yeah. I'm like, I said, for some reason, because of the music condition and us, I'm like, bro, I got shot in the leaves. So then I'm thinking about marketing, and then I'm also thinking about whoever did this got to die off top. I'm like, man, and I can't really breathe because my lungs collapsed. So I'm like fighting for breath. And I think, you know, now I'm sitting in this place and I'm sitting in this hospital and, you know, I got all these nurses coming in, family coming in, and my wife, she was just like done with it because I'm actually married around this time too, all this stuff in the middle. I ain't getting to that. But, you know, all my homeboys, like, we gonna take care of this. We gonna figure this out. You know, they got the edge to the street. People coming to show love, see me in the hospital. And I remember one day this nurse came in. Beautiful, beautiful Caucasian lady. I'm talking about just old. She probably about to be like maybe like 65. And I've never felt like the sweetness like I felt before. She was like, baby, can I pray for you? I'm like, sure. What's going to hurt? Like, yeah, most definitely pray for me. That's one thing I know about street people. They ain't gonna stop you from praying for them. I'm a baby. I'm like, man, that's man. Pray for me. So she prayed for me. And why she cleaned me? Because she had to clean me every day. She had to clean me all up because I couldn't really move. She was like, do you know Jesus, baby? I was like, I think I do. I don't know. Maybe. And she was like, well, he loves you so much. I'm like, thank you. And then she prayed for me. And I was just like, all right, well, cool. That was the best thing. It's cool. And I was like, all right, well, I ain't never see it ever since I was in there again. I ain't never see it. And I remember when the shots went off in the car, I said, God, don't let me die like this, though. I said, don't let me die like this. I ain't trying to die like this. You know, for me, it was a big part of it. It was a big part of my story. But if the seed was planted right there, I wouldn't have known, because I've never had my mind on changing.
Yeah. Your life didn't change right after that. It came later. But that definitely seems to be a significant moment. My question is, what did you know about Jesus in your life? Because obviously you had some idea about God. You thought you knew about Jesus. How much did you know?
I mean, this is what a lot of things I really never got a chance to tell in my testimony. When I was 6 years old, my mother said when it was the thunderstorm, I would go to my window and I would pray in tongues. And I'm like, for real? She said, yeah. She said, you will come downstairs and tell me, Ma, stop doing what you're doing. And I would look at our friends and say, y'all need to stop doing what y'all doing. And I would rebuke them. And every single time it would rain, if our friends was around, she'd be like, they'd be like, where your son at? He'd be coming downstairs real spooky. And I every time it rained, I felt led to go to the window and just start praying in tongues. And I would go downstairs and I'd be like, I say, stop doing what y'all doing. She said she knew I was special. So, nobody had to teach me about the name of Jesus. I just always knew that Jesus was Lord. I don't remember nobody actually teaching me about the Lord. I felt like my mother said I was always a spiritual baby. So, like when I was young, I used to have dreams and visions of being in hell. I used to have demons going to my room. Because I think it happened once I started telling my mother certain things, I kind of got exposed spiritually that God was maybe going to use me one day. And after that, I didn't have no covering. I had nobody to teach me certain things. So even, sin opened doors to certain things. So I was to get tormented. I used to go a lot, to the point one day my mother even put a devil mask on me for Halloween one time. I posed me really as like a red face with horns. It's crazy.
Do you have any examples of these spiritual encounters? I know you were young. Do you remember any of them?
Oh yeah. I remember, when every time I would just go into my room, and even if I just closed my door, everybody went to sleep, things would just start moving in my room. And next thing you know, I would just have to stay up and just like, I was trying to stay up as long as possible. And then when I would dream, it would be always me falling into hell. With things going on around me, I would see like the worst visions of things. And it felt like something was always just coming against me, so wicked. But I couldn't. My mother didn't understand what was going on. My mother to this day, she still remember how I used to lay next to her door just because I could not sleep in that room by myself. It was straight demonic demons in that room.
So at a young age, you had spiritual encounters with demons. You knew Jesus. You were praying in tongues. And then obviously you fell out of that and then got into the whole drug lifestyle and became the guy. That's the story that we were talking about. And then you get to the hospital. You have this woman that prays for you and you feel this peace, which probably, I don't know if it was the first time or it had been a really long time. And what happened after you got out of the hospital?
When I got out of the hospital, they didn't have no medication for me. Like right in there, because Percocets was crazy in the city. So it was a certain way they would just deal with Percocets. And I didn't even know what this pain felt like because I was in the hospital so drugged up most of the time. I never knew how bad the pain really felt. So when I got out of the hospital, I was in like excruciating pain. I was in a house like, yo, somebody come get me. And I just was going through it. It was the worst pain ever. And I was just like, went through that moment for a while. like I had to just rest up and get as best, you know, my mom and my wife and everybody, they took care of me, make sure I was, you know, getting better quick. And then I was just the whole time I'm thinking like, you know, I got to figure out who did this. It was like, you know, are they coming back to, you know, to try to finish the job? You know, like what's going on? I can't trust none of my homies. And then once I got to the point where as though I was able to move around, walk around a little bit again, I was like, all right, I got to get a rental car because I can't, you know, I got to move a little different. And I had to go get drugs. I had to go get work. I had to get, you know what I mean? Still had business to take care of, still had finance to get, you know what I mean? And I was like, all right, so I'm riding around backtrapping with staples in my stomach, blowing in the breathing thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, then I'm back in the studio and all my homeboys in the studio too. And I'm like, I can't rap because I ain't got no wind. And next thing you know, I just made this song and I just started cussing out the whole studio, just saying, if any of y'all got something to do with this, blah, 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 blah. And you know what I'm saying? And then I come out of the studio, I look at all of them, they looking at me like, and I'm like, yeah, got to breathe up, leave my team. So, and I'm so, and then I get it together. We dropped Neighborhood Superstar. I instantly was able to live off of that music. And so I was able to sustain and didn't have to go out as much and trap and sell drugs as much. And it was crazy because I wasn't like spiritually thinking about like the Lord or nothing like that. It was just like right back to it.
Hey, I'm interrupting to tell you that we have a brand new merch line that just dropped. 4 new designs are available. Go check them out. They're awesome and they allow you to plant seeds without preaching. Every purchase also helps to support the channel. So if you like what I do here, consider checking them out on unashamed.ca. The link is also in the description. Thank you. I love you. Now let's get back to the interview. You said you didn't think about anything spiritual. But one day, your whole life changed. And I don't understand what happened. So I want you to tell me, because one day you were this hard drug dealer doing all the things we've been talking about. And the next day you were in love with Jesus and you completely changed. What happened?
So, yeah. So one day we in a club, me, a lot of my homeboys, we in DC, this one, Lil Boosie first come home. And I'm just like, we in a club. And I'm like, yeah. And I, for some reason, I just couldn't drink. I'm like, I don't know why I can't drink. I ain't want to smoke. We all the way out of D.C. I live in Baltimore. I'm like, man, I just didn't even feel like I wanted to be there. Usually, I'm the life of the party. Like, yeah, turn up. Let's go. Let's go. This day, I just didn't feel like, and we had these chains on that, you know, for our team. We had, like, our own chains and stuff like that. So I took my chain off and put it around my homeboy neck. He had, like $200,000 worth of jewelry on. I said, here, take this chain, put it around your neck. I see you tomorrow, bro. I'm going home. And I, you know, went home. And then I was driving home. Like, man, something like felt like it left me when I took that chain off. But I ain't really pay too much attention to it until later. But I did feel like different, like I didn't like belong there. So when I go home, I sit in my living room and my wife come out like, same old thing, 5 o'clock in the morning. That's all you want to do. All you want to do, you got, you know what I mean? You think you can do what you want. I'm like, girl, whatever. You ain't gonna find like me. Never find nobody like me. I was so prideful, so arrogant. Like I felt like I was just that dude, regardless. But just sitting there, and I just felt this overwhelming love sensation just come all over me. And I was like, "What in the world? Like, yo, my goodness, this is crazy. What's going on? Like, I don't even know what's going on. But everything in me know is the Lord. But I still like kind of like trying to figure what's going on out. So I grabbed my phone and tried to Google what was going on with me. And when I tried to Google what was going on with me, a pastor was on there. And a lot of people, I never really tell this part of the story because I don't know. I just don't. But you get it. It was actually Joe Osteen. He talked about the goodness of God. And I'm like, oh, that's what I'm going through right now. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. I got a Bible. First time I opened the Bible, I'm like, what is going on? And I said, I'm knowing I'm encountering Jesus. And I think, you know, 10 hours go past, 15 hours go past. I go to sleep, wake up, back on my knees. I'm back in the Bible. Like, what? And I'm understanding stuff. And every day, I'm walking around with earphones on, listening to worship music, reading the Bible. I don't even know what's going on. I couldn't even go back outside. I forget what time it was, what day it is. I'm just, like, consumed with the presence of the Lord. And I think, you know, I didn't even realize I didn't cuss no more. I start throwing away everything in the house that was filthy. And my wife ain't know what was going on with me because I ain't know how to tell her what was going on with me. I ain't know I wasn't going to ever go back. I just knew that what I was experiencing right now at this moment I felt more cleaner than I ever felt in my life. And that thing, you know, I started talking to people. And when I talked to people, they would start crying. I would just go around people and walk in places, and certain people just started just getting emotional because of the presence of the Lord was just on me. I was with them 15, 20 hours a day. I was only sleeping like 4 hours, maybe 5 hours, but I was in it. I learned how to pray. I didn't like learn how to go to church on a Sunday or learn how to attend a Bible study. I learned a life. I learned the life of Christ, intimacy with the Holy Spirit off the break. It was things that I was seeing in scripture later on that I was already doing because I was with him every day. I was already living out scripture because I was with him every day, all day. And it became so convicting to so many people around me. They was like, yo, I ain't never seen nothing like that. And how did you get there? You know, sometimes people, you know, take the slow walk to get there. But for me, it was just like a straight torch.
Yeah, it was immediate from one day to the other. And what did your wife think? Because your wife knew you as this totally different person. And now the next day, you don't do any of the things you used to do. There's also the money side of it that you weren't too, like, you got away from that. So what did your wife think about your change?
Yeah, well, and it was so crazy about that because around that time, you know, me getting shot and then I was taking losses in the street. So my money wasn't as strong as it could have, like it used to be. So it was like, you know, we were still good, but we wasn't nowhere where we used to be. So the finances was a little weird. But my wife, when I told her about, you know, what was going on with me, she was like, whatever, you just trying to get good time for, you know, being out all the time and all that she was doing. I was like, nah, babe, I really think I know Jesus. I know Jesus. And she was, you know, she was a practicing Jehovah's Witness at this time with her family. You know what I mean? And I, you know, I'm like, they don't, from what I know, they don't ever experience what I'm talking about. So for her, it was just like, whatever, you ain't about to convert me. You ain't about to get me caught up in your stuff that you're going through. But what happened was she would see me crying out 4:30 in the morning every night. Then she would just see people calling my phone and she would see people calling me and all these people calling me to get prayer. And I met in the street or I met through somebody else and I was becoming like people go to when they wanted to talk to Jesus or get understanding about the Bible. And she would see me now with all these books in front of me and she would see me praying and things happening. And I was trying to preach to her and then the Lord said, don't preach to her. You already preach. And I was like, oh. And he was like, she got a front row seat. And things that she would want to do, I didn't want to do no more. Things that people in the world would say that's not bad and it's kind of cool, it just wasn't interesting to me no more. All I wanted to do was just be with Jesus. Even if it was a football game, I was like, no. Let me just be home with the Lord. Like, I didn't really want to do nothing. I just wanted to be in the presence of the Lord. I didn't watch TV no more. So we would watch TV together. I didn't watch nothing secular, nothing. So it was like our fellowship became estranged. So she knew that this is something really happening. I can't even watch a movie with this guy that got cussing and it got killing and he ain't even watching nothing. Now, the music that I used to play in the house, none of it was going on. I'm just like, when people come around me, all they just see is just the glory. All they just see is like his life. And so it was challenging for her for a minute, but like I walked out Christ for 2 years. And one day she just told her mother, like, you know, mom, like, I'm serious. I live with this man. I never seen nobody consistently manifest just life of Christ for real. Never seen nothing like this in my life. You know, her mother told her, well, why don't you go see what's going on in this church? She was just trying to be funny. Then she came to the church and she just enjoyed the service. But she was more so being able to see it, and not just the service, but see the service every day in my life. And one day she just repented and she just started following me as I follow Christ. And now she asked me pastor with me this day, like, on fire, man. Powerful woman of God, man. Like, crazy, man.
What I find interesting is that God told you to not preach to her because you were already doing it with your actions. And I think that's one of the most powerful part of your testimony that I've heard, that our actions speak louder than our words. And we know this, but in the Christian world, a lot of people kind of forget about that. And one part that I don't think you mentioned is the way that your wife went to Christ. And part of it was because she saw your prayers being answered. Do you have examples of like things that you were praying about and she saw, and that convinced her?
Oh yeah, well, it was simple stuff. It was like one time she was trying to go somewhere, and she was like, "Hey, well, can you? I can't find my passport, but can you pay for me to find my passport?" I was like, "Yeah." And I was like, "Lord, where's her passport, Holy Spirit?" And I was like, "Oh, it's downstairs in that basement in this particular spot." And she went down there, and it was right there, and it was just like so many things. So even when they came down, I was buying a house for the first time, like buying a house, and she said, "We're not going to get this house because the deal went the other way on us." I was like, "Nah, babe, that's our house." She said, "Why do you believe?" I said, "I know." I walked around the house and I declared that was our house. She was like, "But the guy didn't take the deal. He said nothing." I said, "Babe, stay in agreement with me. This is our house. I already talked to the Lord. This is our house." And she was like, "Oh, whatever. Okay." And I get home from church one day, and she in the house, she was like, "Babe." I'm like, "What?" She's like, "They took the deal." I was like, "I told you." I said, "I already told you. This is our house." And she was like, "Wow." And in so many different situations that God would just consistently confirm his goodness to her. Like, that's why when people play with me, she don't play, because she just know, like she know how real it is.
That's awesome. And after, I don't know how long it took, but obviously when you gave your life to Christ, you stopped rapping about all these things that you were doing. You kind of stopped music, and eventually you got back into it to make music for Jesus, and you went to secular concerts, and some pretty incredible things happened there. So if you can mention just a few examples, or if you have a story about it, I would love to hear it.
Yeah, like, because I didn't know how to rap for Jesus. I was like, you know, I was cool with nine. I didn't even know they had rappers that rap for Jesus. I didn't even know. And I was just like, all I knew was I couldn't rap no more, and I couldn't make no music like that no more. I was done. I threw all that stuff away. But one of my homeboys was like, "Bro, why don't you go out make a song for the Lord?" Like, "Bro, I don't know how to rap for Jesus, bro. I don't know how to do it." And I made one song, and the song took off, and I started getting buzz around my community, churches and stuff like that, who started like getting hip. Song took off. I'm next thing you know, I'm on a radio station the next week after I make a song. I'm on a radio station. I'm like, "Hey, how this happened?" I'm like, "I didn't even really want to do this." And next thing you know, I got managers coming, people coming, a whole team around me, PRs, people who doing all this stuff, like in 3 weeks. And I'm like, "How all these people get around me?" And now I got this team around me, SPE, Spiritual Plug, everybody around me. I got managers, people, and guess what? I became all their pastor. So I'm ministering to them, keeping them in line. And next thing you know, all this stuff happening. Now I'm on a road meeting all these Christian people, all these people. I don't even know what's going on. And I go into a lot of my ministry. God was sending me was in secular clubs. I was on secular sets with some of the biggest secular artists. The dude PNB Rock, the one who just got murdered in Cali. I'm on a set with him and a lot of different people. They smoking, they drinking in the club. I'm like, "Bro, do they know what they doing? They giving me the microphone?" And the dude was like, "Man, drop the bomb." So they try to put me on first, just out, so they can get me out of the way. But my music wasn't working, so all these rappers, was paying like $1,000, $2,000 to open up for these other rappers. And I'm a Christian artist, I ain't paying nothing. They just got me in there. And then, you know, now my music started getting ready to work, so I go up right before the headliner go up. You know what I mean? And when they pay $20,000 to come. So when I grab the microphone, I walk on stage. And as soon as I walk on stage, I'm like, "Kingdom." And the DJ drop a bomb, like, boom. And I'm like, "Oh, yeah, I come in here in the name of Jesus." The whole club back up. And they looking at me, I'm looking at them. I was like, "Yeah, you see all these dudes who just got off the stage talking all this stuff?" I said, "They lying. That really was my real life. I used to be that." I said, "I came in here to tell y'all about, you know, man, I preached the gospel, lay hands on one girl, she get delivered right in the front of the, what's the name?" Because she was like mugging me. I could see the spirit. Like, I'm like, "Give me Jesus." She come right up out of that thing, like, I said, I'm like, "Whoa." And then I get up there and I get on music and I'm rapping, and I got the whole club screaming Jesus, whole club. And they singing my song, saying, whole world saying, "They don't need God. Bullets get the flying and they scream God. Bullets hit their body, now they need God. Now you about to die, now you scream God." The whole club screaming. They drinking, they screaming Jesus. And I'm like, "Wow." I get off the when I get off the stage, it was Christians who was in the in the club, and they was like, "Bro, I'm a Christian, I'm a believer. How you do what you? How you just do that?" I was like, "Bro, I this is a life, bro. Like this is who He created us to be, light in dark places. Like yeah." I said, "Like don't handle fellowship with darkness, but we come and expose it." So God just exposed what was going on in the room, and they was like, "Bro," I said, "Yeah, I know." I said, "Bro, the thing is, bro." Like, you got to know who He created you to be, bro, and live that out. Like, you're a son. Like, and obviously, so many Christians will get convicted because they had a form of godliness but denied the power of a life change. And it was crazy. And I seen a lot of that stuff happen before I was going on secular events.
Your story is so inspiring to just to look at the person you were and the person you became and how quick the transition was and how polar opposites these two people are. And you've gone through so many different phases of your life. With what you know today, what's the biggest lesson that you've learned throughout all your experiences?
The biggest lesson I've learned, I would say, to treat people the way you want to be treated. Understanding, like, you know, God made every single person with a purpose, and try to see people for the way He see them. That's the thing for me. I'm really about souls. I'm really about souls. I'm really about the body of Christ. I'm really about discipleship. So I'm really about, like, seeing people not get dusty in churches, seeing people not get sit around and not do anything. What God has given them, this time that God has given them on this earth to glorify Him. So, if it was anything, because my whole testimony, I can't take none of that back. That's just a part of my story. That's just a part of what actually how God used me to go evangelize and meet people where they at. But if it would be anything, I always would talk about the work and the life that I get to live for the Lord, and how I treat people, and how I deal with people, and how I make sure that I'm just making sure that I'm giving them everything that I could possibly give Him for His glory and not hold anything back. So treat people how I want to be treated, like give them the fullness of the love of God that He put in me.
And if you could tell a message to people that have grown up in a similar situation that you did or have lived a lifestyle that you were involved in, what would it be?
I would say, you know, just be honest with yourself. For real. Like be honest with yourself. Really come talk to God on your own, because you know you're not satisfied. You know you're not enjoying it. You know that you lost the homeboy last week, another one 2 months ago before that, another one 8 months ago before that. You lost a family, and the truth is you saying fly high, but if you believe that there is a God, you believe that that person and that lifestyle they was living lived a life that was actually pleasing to God, or was it pleasing to the devil? And I would just say, honestly, just be honest with yourself. This is a consistent trend. You know what's happening. You know what's going on out here. You hear the demonic things that people saying, demon time. And there's really spirits out here that's really just tormenting and destroying people's purpose. Kill, steal, and destroy. That's all it is. You judge a tree by the fruit it produces. You ain't gonna be out here calling an apple tree or orange tree. You're gonna be calling it an apple tree because that's what the truth of what it is about the apple tree. So the fact that you see people dying every single day in the same consistent pattern, you see nothing but rottenness. You see nothing but nothing growing out of it. No life being produced out of it. It's going to be a time that you're going to stand before God, and you have to answer to what you did with the life of His Son, Him sending a sacrifice for your sin, and Him sending a sacrifice for you to be in relationship with Him again. What you going to do with that? Because you can't stand before God saying, "I was a good person." I don't care how good of a person could be. They could be morally excellent, but in God's eyes, they are filthy rags. Their righteousness is nothing. That's why He sent His Son to die for us. His Son righteousness. His Son is the only righteousness that could ever please Him. And He sent that for man. God don't send no man to hell. We send ourselves. by rejecting the sacrifice that he sent for us. So I would say, man, like, man, for real, if you really want to know the fullness of life, like, you really want to know what true pleasure is, like, true contentment, like, real peace, like, real love, real genuine love, uncompromised, like, no matter what you could ever do, you are always in his hands. Man, turn that thing around, man. Like, listen to my story. Learn from my mistakes. Don't follow this highway, this big road that everybody's following to hell. And Jesus said, I'm the way to the Father. I'm that door, the narrow way. So that's your opportunity, man, just to really just check in, man. That's what I would say to anybody, man.
Thank you for watching this episode of the Almost False Podcast. If you still have questions about this story, join us on Locals for the after show, where you can ask questions directly to our guests. Also, come join our Discord community and hang out with us. It's an awesome place to find and interact with like-minded people. If you're interested in sharing your story and being on the show, you can go to almostfalse.net to submit it. And if that sounds intimidating, consider taking a free online course on how to share your testimony more effectively. All those links will be in the description. Thanks for watching, and I'll catch you in the next one. Stay blessed.